You're listening to At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends, themes, and industries in markets today. I'm Phoebe White, lead U.S. inflation strategist, and on the phone with me today, I have Jay Barry, head of government bond strategy. Last week, we revised up our assumptions for fiscal stimulus, now projecting a $1.7 trillion package to be passed later this quarter, up from $900 billion previously. And this has implications for our forecasts on yields, break-evens, and overall Treasury issuance. So Jay, can you walk us through how you're thinking about yield targets given these revised assumptions?
Sure. Thanks so much, Phoebe. You know, as you mentioned, we've clearly made significant changes to our fiscal stimulus forecast, and we're now looking for about $1.7 trillion in fiscal stimulus to be passed in the next month or so from $900 billion previously. And this will add another 1.1 percentage points to real GDP growth in 2021 and 0.2 percentage points in 2022. So we're now looking for 6.4% growth this year and 2.8% growth next year, which if we're right, will take the unemployment rate down to 4.5% by the end of this year and 3.6% by the end of next year. And we think that this is also going to have significant implications for our rate forecasts as well. We've talked about this in the past, that Treasury yields are certainly less sensitive to growth expectations than they were 5 or 10 years ago, but still they remain a very key driver of long-term yields. And some of the work that we've done has suggested that every 1 percentage point increase in consensus growth expectations is worth about a 15 to 20 basis point rise in long-term yields. So with us adding about a percentage point onto growth for this year, and close to that on average over the course of the next 2 years, we've raised our Treasury targets, and we're now looking for 10-year yields to rise to 150 by the middle of the year and 165 by year-end. And our year-end target is about 20 basis points higher than our previous expectations, reflecting that growth dynamic we talked about. But we think most of the rise will be concentrated in the intermediate sector and at the long end. And mainly, we think the front end will be very well anchored here, primarily because the Fed's shift to flexible average inflation targeting is expected to keep policy expectations well anchored. So we really see, you know, 2 and 3 year Treasury yields only rising up to the top end of the Fed funds target range and just beyond that by the end of the year. So on balance, we are looking for the Treasury curve to steepen from current levels, but we think it will be sort of, broadly speaking, the intermediate and the long end of the curve that will be leading us in the way to higher yields over the balance of the year.
Great. And so can you talk a bit more about the path to higher yields from here? I mean, we've seen a pretty aggressive move recently. And, you know, I guess we're getting a lot of questions about the risks of a taper tantrum this year. So can you just talk about some of those risks?
Yeah, sure. It's been certainly a swift move this year with rates about 35 basis points higher in the year to date. I think a lot of that comes from these change in growth expectations that we've talked about, because the market's growth expectations are arguably 2 percentage points higher for this year than they were at the start of the year before the results of the Georgia runoff elections, and because inflation expectations have risen materially as well. So the path of the increase in yields that we're looking from current levels is likely to be slower than what we've seen in the first 7 weeks of the year. And very locally right now, if we look at sort of the conditions in the marketplace, it would tell us that we're perhaps likely due for a bit of a pause in this trend to higher rates for a number of reasons. First, in the move to higher yields, the market's brought forward its expected date for Fed liftoff from right around early 2024 to midsummer of 2023. And while above trend growth in itself indicates the Fed might start normalizing sooner, we know from the Fed's flexible average inflation targeting framework that it requires labor markets at maximum employment, inflation at 2%, and likely heading above 2% to create the preconditions for liftoff. In our own forecast, we don't see inflation actually hitting 2% in core PCE space for the first time until the end of 2022. And if we believe what the leadership of the Fed have told us, and Vice Chair Clarida has talked about this, it probably requires a year at 2% inflation for liftoff to occur. So that seems a bit aggressive to us right now. And more broadly, the way we look at long-term Treasury yields after adjusting for how the market's pricing the Fed and inflation expectations, but also for the Fed's forward guidance and its balance sheet size, it appears to us that long-term Treasury yields are about 20 plus basis points higher than their fundamental drivers would suggest. So we've decoupled a bit from our drivers very locally. And then finally, investor positioning seems quite bearish at the moment. Our own Treasury client survey remains net short. And the extent of this short position is on the larger side of what we have seen over the past year, which even encompasses some of the time before the pandemic broke out in the U.S. in the early part of March last year. So with the market pricing of Fed likely to lift off by the middle of 2023, with valuations cheap relative to drivers and with investor positioning short, we think the path to higher yields will be somewhat slower now than they were in the last couple of weeks and frankly in the last couple of months. And we think that the risks of a taper tantrum are somewhat reduced versus what we saw in 2013. And this is something that we wrote about recently last week with the economics team. The first is we do think that the flexible average inflation targeting framework will be a better anchor to the market's Fed expectations, because certainly those expectations have moved forward right now, but still the market's not pricing a hike for about 2.5 years. Whereas in 2013, the market brought its Fed tightening expectations more than a year forward. Second, prior to the taper tantrum in 2013, valuations looked rich on our fair value framework, whereas we just talked about right now, they actually look a bit cheap. And then finally, you know, there are parallels out there between 2013 and now that there is a Fed succession dynamic. And in the summer of 2013, with Chair Bernanke's tenure coming to an end, markets were debating about who his successor would be. And media reports were indicating that former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers had the lead over Janet Yellen. And at the time, he was perceived to be somewhat more hawkish with respect to the efficacy of QE and the path of policy rates. So that added fuel to the fire and the sell-off. And certainly right now, the market's debating fiscal stimulus, and Larry Summers has certainly been a key part of that debate. But if we think about Fed succession, Chair Powell's tenure is up in less than a year. We don't know if he will be renominated, but it seems like with every day that goes past, the probability of that occurring have increased. And if anything, with former Fed Chair Yellen, now Treasury Secretary, and likely to have a significant amount of input over Fed succession, I think it's highly unlikely she would want to nominate anyone who's more hawkish than Chair Powell right now. So on balance, with the market's expectations better anchored, with valuations already somewhat cheap, with positions already short, and with the likelihood of hawkish Fed succession, we think the risks of a taper tantrum are pretty low right now. But that being said, you know, the one wild card that we can point to is that Treasury market structure has become much more brittle over the last 7 or 8 years. And we know that we're more prone to outsized bouts of volatility, mainly because of who's actually trading in the interdealer markets and the proliferation of the PTF community there. Well, of course, we saw this in a very wholesale fashion last spring, but we've seen it a number of times over the last 6 or 7 years. So while the fundamentals don't indicate a high likelihood of a taper tantrum, certainly we can argue that if volatility picks up sustainably, some of these market structure dynamics could push rates more aggressively away from fair value than would be indicated just by the fundamentals overall. But I think we'd say that the vulnerability relative to a taper tantrum are somewhat lower than we saw in 2013. Why don't we turn to tips now? How do you project that faster growth and larger fiscal stimulus will impact the tips market for the balance of this year?
Well, despite the better growth trajectory, we haven't revised up our inflation forecasts by much. We still see core PCE rising gradually and reaching 2% just by the end of next year, with core CPI running slightly above that, near 2.2%. That said, we should get a temporary rise in the year-ago rates this spring, around the time that strong fiscal support is delivered and the Fed looks past the temporary lift and recommits to providing accommodation. So we do think the backdrop should stay supportive for tips over the coming months. I guess just quickly, though, if you look back at what tips have done over the past week, we have seen 10-year break-evens narrow quite sharply. They were at a local peak near 225 basis points and are now closer to about 217 currently. So it's been somewhat surprising just given the progress on the fiscal front, but I think this largely reflects an unwinding of the premium that was priced into the tips market over recent months. I mean, in fact, if you look at the residual on our fair value model, it shrank from about 18 basis points just over a week ago to just 4 basis points on Friday. That's within the standard error of the model for the first time in nearly 2 months. So, you know, break-evens had really run ahead of fundamentals in their aggressive widening move at the start of the year and now look much more appropriately priced. From here, as fundamentals continue to improve and the technical backdrop remains supportive, we look for 10-year break-evens to widen to about 235 basis points over the coming quarters. That would leave our 10-year real yield target at about negative 70 basis points, modestly higher than our previous forecast, but not a level that we think would be too concerning for the Fed. So Jay, let's turn to supply. Can you talk about how the change in the deficit outlook will impact Treasury issuance in 2021?
Sure, Phoebe. So naturally, we do think that this increased fiscal stimulus will in fact lead to larger federal budget deficits, which will require with it more Treasury financing as well. So we've raised our fiscal year 21 deficit forecast from 3.2 trillion up to 3.7, and our fiscal 22 deficit forecast from 2.1 trillion to 2.4 trillion. The net of that is we're now forecasting over 3 trillion in net Treasury issuance this year, which is about $600 billion higher than our previous forecast. But we're expecting this whole increase in issuance to come vis-a-vis the T-bill market. So previously, we were looking for a net drawdown in T-bill issuance this year, but now we're looking for about $269 billion in net privately held borrowing in T-bills this year. You know, one could argue that this increase in financing needs could increase the need for further increases in coupon auctions, but we think this should be all T-bill funded for a couple of reasons. First is that the Treasury moved so aggressively last year to increase its longer-term auction sizes that it's created over $1 trillion in annualized borrowing capacity for this year compared to last. And this is something that we've been focused on for quite a while, but it means that the Treasury is really well-financed to meet its financing needs, not just for this year, but for the coming years as well. And we pair its financing needs from the coupon auction schedule with potential borrowing needs from future budget deficits. And it seems like it's more than adequately there financed. So we don't necessarily need more coupon issuance. And second, I think this will be really helpful for the money markets, as increased T-bill issuance will help improve the functioning of money markets. T-bills have substantially outperformed this year. The whole T-bill complex trades inside of 5 basis points. It's richened by 3 to 6 basis points versus OIS. And bills are basically at their richest levels since we saw late last March, just prior to T-bill issuance ramping up around the passage of the CARES Act. When we combine this negative net issuance with the increasing influence of the GSEs on the repo markets, and then the ongoing growth of reserves from the Fed's asset purchases and the drawdown of the TGA, and it's really impacting money markets rates here. And I think it's leaving investors concerned about whether this fall in money market rates will leave the Fed with a need to raise its administer rates, the IOER and the RRP rates, to make sure that the Fed funds rate stays within its target range. So we think net T-bill issuance now turning positive will help create better functioning in the money markets and will mean that the likelihood of a further richening in these money market rates will be diminished somewhat. And it's not just the Fed that's focused on this, but the Treasury is as well, because prior to the February refunding, its questionnaire to the dealer community inquired about how quickly it could draw down the pace of bill supply without creating disruptions at the short end of the curve. So we think pushing all this issuance into bills over the next sort of 3 or 4 months or so will be helpful for making sure that functioning remains pretty strong there. And while this will slow the pace of the extension of the weighted average maturity of the Treasury's debt, it will only modestly so. So previously, we looked for the WAM of Treasury's debt to extend by a record pace and be back above pre-pandemic levels by the end of this year. But right now, we're looking for the WAM to be at 67 months by the end of this year. And that's a 2-month extension from where we are currently, while the T-bill share of the market declines back to 21%, just barely above the top end of the 15 to 20% share that the Treasury has targeted. But over the medium term, it still seems like we're on a path towards a slightly longer WAM, back to pre-pandemic levels, and T-bills representing a smaller share of the market, but by this time, really, in 2022. So we think for a number of reasons, we'll see more issuance, but more of it will come in bills. It will be well digested, and it really won't change our outlook on the duration of issuance for this year.
Great. Thank you, Jay. Institutional clients of JP Morgan can find more on these topics on JP Morgan Markets at jpmm.com or reaching out directly with questions. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read JP Morgan research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2021, JP Morgan Chase & Co., all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on February 22nd, 2021.